Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, your community-based independent radio in Panhandle, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stacy Okowski.
We are your story hosts for the next hour. It is Monday, June 15th. And we have stories from the weekend and the past week to share with you, as well as some other stories that are from other places.
And thanks to Andy off at Irwin for opening our show with Tarry Here. Andy is a good friend and a great storyteller. And he's coming next month, and there's going to be a workshop.
Yes. Stash, give me a time check so I can synchronize.
We have been on the air for 1 minute exactly.
Great. Perfect.
I was so ready this morning. I almost decided to sing. But then I
changed. I love it when you sing. You were going to sing. Yeah. You're saying you're going to sing today on air?
No. I was all set and everything, and I thought, oh, hang on, I could practice, the Ugly Duckling, which I'm not going to do for a while, and then I'm with my accordion and all, but I don't even have the accordion on. And then when I looked up, it was 9 o'clock. So
you're going to use your accordion when you do your virtual sessions for the library.
For the Ugly Duckling, I am, yeah. Oh. Yeah, I play the accordion with the Ugly Duckling, and what I have to do is look on the shelf and find my companion. Years ago, when I was still teaching in Frederick, my goodness, in the 90s, I found a lovely duck, a brown, a brown duck that was just about the size of, I guess, maybe the size of a full-grown cardinal.
Okay. I thought you were going to say a lovely accordion, and so you totally took me off guard when you said a lovely duck.
No, actually, I did find a lovely accordion in the 90s in Hagerstown while Terry was playing at a harp gig, and I was roaming around the town. Sitting outside of a store was a beautiful red accordion, and I had to go and pick up Terry, and on the way out, I said, I'm going to stop at this store. This is fake. If that accordion is still there, I'm going to buy it. And it's a small accordion, really, it was beautiful and had a great tone.
Everything. Not a concertina.
No. Accordion. This was a piano accordion, piano keys.
Yeah.
And so I had it, and I used it a number of times. It was fun, in 2000 and whatever, 12, how old, yeah, 2012, John was born,
my grandson,
and one time I went to his house and took my accordion, and he was maybe about 3 or 4 then. And I gave him the red accordion as a present. And I have a couple of really cool pictures of Jaji and John side by side playing the accordion.
Does he play?
Well, no. He did what I was doing as far as moving the accordion in and out and pushing the buttons. And we had fun,
He noticed.
I'm hoping that he will someday, do something with pick it up again, and I may leave that my accordion to him in my will.
That would be just charming.
I think so. He has my grandfather's sword already.
Yikes. The image of this, what is he, eight now?
He will turn 8 on July 1st.
So I have this image of him, like a Maury Sendak story, of holding his accordion under his arm and his great-grandfather's sword.
That could be cool.
Running down the street. I hope that doesn't happen.
No. No, he has not even touched the sword. I gave it to his mother and father. It's in trust, yeah. Because it's a real weapon. And I wouldn't, you know. Now I forgot why I got off of that.
Well, I forgot too, because when you were talking, it reminded me of... we both saw Eileen Evans live Facebook performance this week, and something you just said reminded me of that. I don't remember what it was, but we need to talk about that because it was memorable.
Okay. It was memorable. I enjoyed it very much, and I hope I did not miss anything that she said in explanation at the beginning, but the only thing that was disturbing to me was the setting. I couldn't help but I wanted to make notes on saying, why is that box sitting there? And why is that clothes rack behind you that's distracting as anything?
She was using them.
But
she used both of them.
She did. Later, she sat on the box to put on her shoes.
She also had her materials that she was showing to the audience.
Right.
On the box.
Yeah, and they started out on a table. Anyway, right. I found it not a perfect set. I won't say it was bad or anything, because I know Eileen is special.
She was in her office. In Thomas, West Virginia. So she has very, very little furniture there, very little in the way of props. And she's done that performance multiple times, but always in other settings where there was a stage. And so she's limited in that space.
Right. I would have liked it if it was a blank wall behind her.
Okay.
You know, only because for me, I found it distracting.
Well, she took her jacket on and off when she did. You see her when she first came in singing,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she, so her part of her costume was hanging on that clothes rack,
right? Yeah, and that makes sense.
And it was a period piece. I mean, it was from the turn of the century,
from 1930 or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah. She, I thought she did a wonderful job. Yes. One thing I noticed, and I'll never get a chance to tell her, and I probably wouldn't anyway, but I always have the impression, I've seen her a few times, and I have the impression that she, what she says is not unpolished, it's very polished, and it's memorized. I don't know if that's true or not.
In the sense that she does hour-long performance. This was a half-hour performance, and she routinely does hour-long performances. But she is so settled in her characters.
Right.
Did you get to hear the Q&A at the end?
I did.
So she can talk about any topic as one of her characters.
Sure.
So it's memorized in the sense that she can do the whole hour in the character's own words. She's mostly using the character's own
words.
But it's not memorized in the sense that if she goes off track, she can't come back. I mean, she knows the words. She knows the stories.
So. And I believe that. And this is not like... this is a workshop thought.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was... And I wouldn't... I don't know her well enough that I would offer this to her. But there were... two or at least two, maybe three times when I thought she hesitated and was grabbing for a word. And it just looked to me like that was a memorized sentence. And she stumbled on it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm saying she stumbled on it. No, I don't think anybody would notice it. You know,
well, I'm sure there are paragraphs that she can recite, as you were saying, memorized,
right,
because she's done this performance right, so many times, and she knows.
Right. Yes,
So I wanted to say, to make sure everybody knew this, that Eileen Evans was portraying Cora Lee Franklin Cook, who was first a student and eventually a teacher at Storer College in Bolivar, right, West Virginia,
yeah,
and until she went to Howard and taught there. So she lived in Washington, D.C., but started out in
someplace else.
Ohio, I'm thinking, but... Mm-hmm. but moved to Storer, right, to go to school. The right, founders of the college sought her out.
Right. I thought it was a wonderful thing, and I was glad I was able to watch it. And then I saw your comment, and I even made a comment at hand. Laughed when I saw your comment. I couldn't help but laugh.
Are you going to out me now?
No.
Yeah, you should.
Okay.
Unless
your comment said you saw about half of it, and because you were having trouble with connection.
Oh my God. Well, first of all, she had sent out the link.
Mm-hmm.
But the link took me back to her website, back to Voices, right, from the Earth, VFTE, right, website. And the website had no link. I went to every single button I could go to on the website. And
right,
then finally, boom, I don't know what I pushed, but I got it. And by that time, it was 2:15. And right, I had already messaged her tech, who was helping her with filming and right, taking messages so people could ask questions and participate. Yeah. But I'm interested in Cora Lee Franklin Cook, who Eileen Evans was portraying, because she was a very prominent suffragist, a women suffragist, and a big part of the performance that Eileen did yesterday was about the 1913 march that Cora Lee Franklin Cook participated in with Alice Paul and Ida B. Wells and a number of really prominent suffragists,
right,
in Washington, D.C., right. But she also was friends with Susan B. Anthony and a number of other suffragists. And it was that controversy over from that march in D.C. over whether African-American women were going to be allowed to participate, and the compromise that made it possible for them to participate, even though a huge percentage of the suffragists were against having African-Americans in the parade.
Sure.
That was all fascinating.
Right. I learned some stuff about that. It was good. I enjoyed it very much, and I've never been disappointed seeing her anyplace.
Yeah.
And
she's the consummate professional.
Right. So I thought it was wonderful. My problem with it was she was sideways on my screen.
Yeah, mine too, to start
for a couple, and so I kept turning my iPad, and yeah, I would get it up. It would be upright for 4 seconds, and then it would turn sideways again. Finally, her tick fixed it.
And then she was upside down for a while.
Yes.
That was even more unnerving.
Right.
And I was watching on the desktop, so I couldn't do anything.
You couldn't turn.
Right.
Wow. Well,
she eventually was right side up.
Yes. So it was good. So, and I see you're going to go to the workshop with Andy.
Yes, I am.
Good for you.
And I think there might even possibly be some spaces available still, but that's by invitation. So people should connect if they want.
Right. Yeah. There was a big list of people that that Susan sent the list out to. Mm-hmm. I think quite a few people.
But I think she has six so far.
Yeah. See, what you and I are doing now is, to me, is very pleasant, and I like it because I can see you, I can understand you well, and I can even see your facial expressions. If I say something dumb, you're going to go, you know, and that's important, you know. I couldn't see doing a workshop and people not being able to do the normal intimate kind of connection.
We need to get you into a workshop where that happens. Eileen Evans did a workshop that was just like that for me. And we had people from Chicago, three people from Chicago.
Yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, I am a different kind of goose, you know. So anyway, and I started this whole thing about the ugly duckling. That's mm-hmm. how we got into Hagerstown. So let me finish that story because I think
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's my fault. So here I was at Frederick High School, and I found this duck, and I thought, wow, not long ago I saw a really nice swan in a Goodwill, a wooden carving of a swan mm-hmm. that was bigger than this duck, but not a great deal bigger. Mm-hmm. And I thought, boy, when I tell the ugly duckling, I devise this thing. I have the duck is sitting on top of a brown colored cloth that I hold in my right hand. And I'm holding it by the swan, which is underneath this circular piece of wood. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing the verses of the ugly duckling, playing the accordion with my left hand, holding the ugly duckling up so the kids can see. And then in the last verse where the swans find him in the reeds and tell him, oh, you're a beautiful swan. And he says, me? No. And they say, look, look. And so while I'm doing, and when I'm saying that exact couple of words, I turn my hand over. And the bottom of the brown cloth is a blue-colored cloth on that same wooden thing. The ugly duckling disappears, and there's this beautiful white swan.
Oh,
there.
You're using an upside-down doll that you made out of the two wooden carvings.
Yeah, and very it's just nice. Just perfect. Yeah. And a wonderful seamstress at Frederick High School who had a reputation for being a bit of a grouch. You know, she taught, they still had home ec classes in that school. Mm-hmm. I even said the wrong school. I said Frederick High School, and it wasn't. It was 10 years earlier in Lock Raven High School. In Baltimore County. I went to her and I said, I have this idea and I need a piece of material that's brown on one side and blue on the other side.
Went to her this week?
No, I went to her in 1989 or 90.
Okay.
And she said, what's this for? And I told her, and she smiled and said, that's delightful. You tell stories to children. And I said, yeah, every day. And so, thinking I made a cute joke because I was a teacher on that faculty. And she didn't smile at the joke. But she did like the idea. And so she made this beautiful cloth for me. And,
wow.
And I still have it. And I've used it every place I've used it over the last 30 years or so. Mm-hmm. I've had to replace the duck. And the duck got kind of worn out. So
the duck got worn out.
Yeah.
You're a hard taskmaster.
Holding the duck and turning it upside down and everything. Okay, so are you going to tell us a story?
Yeah, if I can say one more thing about Eileen Evans.
Sure.
She is going to, so this was the first of six performances of historical characters, and I think she's not doing all of them herself. I think some others of them, some of the six, will be from other voices from the earth, portrayers or reenactors or storytellers. But they're Sundays. They're always going to be Sundays at 2 o'clock. And if you go to VFTE.org, Voices from the Earth, acronym VFTE.org, you can see the schedule for the coming year. And that's part of the West Virginia Humanities Grant that Eileen has at VFTE are operating. Okay. So should I tell a story?
Yes, please.
Okay, again, this is from my ongoing series of Downtown Hagerstown Arts and Entertainment District stories that I am working on. So this is another just starting out the gate story that will change over time. I grew up in Funkstown, born 1960 or so, when I was 6, 7, 8 years old. The trolley from Funkstown to Hagerstown stopped running in the 1940s. But my mom and I would take the bus to Public Square in Hagerstown at least weekly to meet my grandmother. She worked at the shoe company in Hagerstown on Franklin Street for a long time. She retired from the shoe factory. What always struck me about Hagerstown at that age was how many people there were out on the street filling the sidewalks. Mom always said, "And don't let go of my hand or I'll lose you in all these people." Oh, well, that was about 1960. We'd go for lunch or a snack at Newberry's or one of those places downtown. They had lunch counters where you could get a sandwich, a soda, ice cream for a treat. But I liked to go to the Chinese restaurant. We only had one on South Potomac Street. That was my favorite place because the fire department was right next door. If I got lucky, I might hear a fire siren go off, and a second later, the trucks would come peeling out. Best lunch ever for a six-year-old. Well, by the late 60s, I'd be going to the Colonial Theater or Henry's Theater for movies. I was 15 or 16. There were cars everywhere. Everyone had a car by then. And it was even busier downtown Hagerstown. The sidewalks were packed. Hagerstown was the big city for me. I remember Christmas downtown. We had shops in Funkstown that decorated for the holidays. But in Hagerstown, the windows were done up. It was a whole different experience. More lights, more to see. I used to get my dad to drive me in just to look at the decorations, sometimes twice a week, until he got tired of that anyway. In 1975, I started working downtown, you guessed it, the fire department. Now, Valley Mall, outside of town, had opened the year before, but the impact on downtown had not really... Excuse me. And not really kicked in yet. Pretty steadily, though, downtown became less of a shopping hub, more of a business center. The mall had a big impact eventually. Smaller businesses just couldn't compete. Different types of businesses came in to replace them. Lots of offices. We lost a lot of restaurants, but gained office workers. Now, in the early 70s, there were a series of fires. We lost McCrory's, Newberry's, and the theater. I wasn't in a position at that time to be privy to those investigations, so my only knowledge comes from hearsay. I can't speak for the department on that. I know those fires were investigated. There were millions of dollars in damage. And the companies couldn't replace those buildings, so they just closed. The city had to think about that. Well, what could go downtown? The economic situation was a problem. The factories and even the agriculture industries inside the city and farms around the city, those were the lifeblood of the city for so long, and it all transitioned overseas. Things were different now. It was harder for folks to find trade jobs, especially. The tool trades, engineers, had been the backbone of the community at Fairchild Aeronautics and the Pangborn plant. The railroad was the major employer, and they also declined. I retired in 2008 from fire service, 33 years with the city. I see in the papers where Hagerstown does or does not have problems. Every county goes through this. The change is here, not unique. There were good efforts from the local government in the 70s, at least through the 90s, with progress for adapting, some positive changes too. The Arts and Entertainment District especially made a difference. There's talk of extending that area. You cannot put everything in the same block and expect a resurgence of the whole downtown. A lot of people worked hard to bring that to fruition. I'm talking city staffers now. Politicians worked on this too, but it was city staffers who did the bulk of the work. Most of them understood their own role in bringing the city back, especially since the 2000s. The developers I worked with in the fire service were reasonable people for the most part. They certainly understood that doing things the right way, using the right materials and meeting standards meant the work would endure. Doing it right, not just for short-term gain, but doing it because it was the right thing to do, to help the city grow and endure. That wasn't always the philosophy back in the 70s, for example. Now I see young people, entrepreneurs working all the time to establish themselves. In the beginning, people weren't used to the new kinds of shops, boutiques, they called them, and new food offerings could take a long time to catch on. There'd be some support when a new place opened, but if the economy took even a small hit, that would be the end of that new trend. It's hard to start a new business, I don't have to tell you. We have so much potential to draw people here to Hagerstown. We've not even scratched the surface of the treasures and the history we could be spotlighting to bring people here. The city's done a good job when they get hold of funding. So far, it hasn't been enough to turn things around. I miss the streets being crowded. There's an energy and enthusiastic crowds that can change the world, certainly change a city. Of course, even the malls that started the exodus from downtown, they're hurting now too. We've become an online world, especially for shopping. When I was working, I was outside on the streets every day. I'd buy lunch downtown, but I had to eat on the run in my car. Between investigations or inspections for new development, new housing, new shopping center construction. You know, those pocket parks the city's putting in now, small green space places all over town, those are great for families. My best memories are about walking around the city, spending time at City Park or the high schools for sports events, American Legion for baseball, those were my green spaces. And the stadium for the Suns. Did you know it was built by the Works Progress Administration? WPA for the city in the 1930s, but I didn't go there till later with my kids to see the Suns team. Well, talk of a new stadium is controversial, so I won't go there. We've plenty of wonderful resources near us. Antietam Battlefield is a major draw. There are dozens of period connections in this city that tie in. There are all kinds of books available on local architecture and the history of our landmarks by local authors. I was just reading the other day about Zion Reformed Church on North Potomac. You know that place? Well, listen to this. George Armstrong Custer. You all know who that is, right? he got his comeuppance courtesy of Sitting Bull at the Battle of Little Bighorn. Well, who knew he was connected to Hagerstown, Maryland? Apparently, he used the Zion Church downtown bell tower as an observation post during the Civil War. That shocked me. Well, one of the things the fire service was very effective on was fire education. We had a full-time public educator, fire educator. He was largely responsible for the idea and the initial energy behind the children's village, the safety village. Well, that's not downtown, but every child in the school system has access to that and the safety education that came with it. In my career, I saw nearly 40 fire fatalities, and each one was devastating to me, not to mention the families of the victims and the firefighters who worked trying to save each one of those people. The worst ones were the Super 8 Motel fire on the dual highway back in 90 or 91. I spent some time after that one just sitting in the car to pull myself together. I knew how bad it was. That was a really hard one. And the Hagerstown Lumber Company back in 1975, we were there for days. We're a small city, but a city all the same. We have the same issues that Baltimore and DC have: old buildings, declining housing stock, explosive materials in storage. It all correlates. Fire education is the key, and we did make a difference. You can see it in the statistics. Kitchen fires especially are way down now. But really, you never get the statistics on the fires that didn't happen because someone was educated and knew not to leave a pot cooking unattended or turn off the Christmas tree lights. I'm almost 70 now. I rarely go downtown now. I rarely have a reason to go. Breaks my heart. I know there are beautiful buildings waiting to be repurposed. The downtown university campus, for example, is one of those success stories. If you stand in the green space, that plaza, you look up, see the opening to the sky. It is so amazing for Hagerstown to have that. We're lucky to have that. Now, downtown has had a perceptual problem for a long time. Old buildings are hard to renovate. Sometimes the dollars talk. It hurts me every time I hear, tear it down. That's our history. And I hate to lose that history.
Well, very nice. I do have some comments if you want them.
Oh, good. Yes, please.
Yes. And I'm guessing that at one point you touched your ear. So I must have been, you must have heard my rocking chair.
No, it wasn't your rocking chair. It was everything. You were taking notes and you were moving around. So I could hear that. And I don't know if our listeners can hear it or not. I can hear it through the headphones. So it's hard
to tell. Yeah. Well, it wasn't moving except for rocking. but I'm glad you reminded me to make sure to, you know, to turn the sound down. Anyway, I enjoyed that. It was good. So there were some questions.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned businesses there.
Mm-hmm.
He did not mention the company that makes the great trucks.
Mack Truck.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, he never mentioned Mack Truck in the interview, but I think because it's still operating. So most of the companies he mentioned were the ones who disappeared that made such a big impact. Now, Mack Truck has certainly gone through ups and downs, and they're way, 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 way under what they used to be.
Right. But they're known nationwide.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Powertrain.
Right. I remember many times seeing a truck go by, and it was a Mack truck, and right away, even though I didn't have any idea where Hagerstown was,
mm-hmm.
I could say, whoa, they're made in Hagerstown, you know, stuff like that. And, yeah. and I can remember impressing someone with that knowledge.
Yeah.
Who followed up with, wow, where's Hagerstown? I said, I don't know. You know, but I knew it was in Maryland. And so there was a reference to city staffers.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that is. What are they?
City staffers, people who work for the city.
Okay.
So he was a city employee.
Right.
When he worked for the fire service. Right. So it's important to him that city employees be recognized as opposed to elected officials who come and go. And so one of the things that several people talked about in their interviews was worrying that small gains that they see downtown can be lost in an election because everybody comes in and wants to make their own mark as a politician.
Right.
And they may or may not totally dismantle what was done in the past administration. And you can see that on a national level, too. But he wanted to make it clear that aside from what politicians do, it's the city staffers who are there year after year after year who really see things through.
Well, I may be the only one who doesn't know what a city staffer is.
Okay, so I need a different way to say that.
Well, you know, I mean, it could be as simple as saying when city staffers, you know, people who work for the city.
Mm-hmm.
So the WPA was that was a great piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I never knew that. I've been to the stadium multiple times.
Right.
Never knew that.
Well, I think that was super because it gives a real historical thing. Zion Reformed Church, Bell Tower. This is a personal prejudice. I wish he had fallen out of the bell tower. So.
Custer, you mean?
Custer, I have never
not my firefighter.
This. No,
yeah.
This is one of the things I have never understood. There are places dedicated to the memory of Custer, and I think he is far worse than any Confederate person that ever lived or wore the uniform of the Confederate Army. You know, he was an evil, evil man. He was a killer.
He was
soldier.
A character. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. You know. Anyway.
Well, you know, I love that line. I wish I could use it, but I can't. This particular character would never say anything like that.
No. And, you know, it's an unfortunate.
Diplomat.
Custer is considered a hero by many, many Americans, and he's not a hero, you know.
Have you heard W. Thomason's story about meeting Custer's great-great-grandson, great-great-great-grandson? She told the story that included the Battle of Little Bighorn in the story, and he came up to her afterwards and just said, "I'm Custer's great great grandson," and she was whoa.
Yeah.
But he shook her hand and said he was very pleased that she was telling the story, and he honored her truth and.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she's even been in contact with him once or twice.
Oh,
since.
Good. The 40 fatalities that he mentioned while he was serving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's. I'm glad that was included without listing them or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
But the Hagerstown Lumber Company was mentioned, but nothing else.
Yeah, so when I was pulling this together, I had to research, you know, so when I'm interviewing people, they don't always tell me enough to know what the heck they're talking about. So I record what they say, but then I may not have yet had time to go back to check my assumptions with the person I interviewed.
Right.
So I'm using online to collect more information.
Sure.
And I just didn't have, that was one thing that I didn't have time to go back and check. Even where the lumber company that I know now is out near the railroad tracks in the North End. And I don't think that's the one he's talking about because when I just went online and typed in Hagerstown Lumber Company and there were several fires, but I'm not sure which company was the one with the big fire. So I still have to figure that out. I did get the date, but that was
right. Okay, well, and the downtown university campus, what university is there?
University of Maryland, Hager, USMH, University of Maryland, Hagerstown.
Okay, I didn't know that.
It's operated by Frostburg, but Towson has a presence, Frostburg has a presence, and College Park has a presence, I believe. All
in Hagerstown. Mm-hmm. All in Hagerstown.
Mm-hmm. You should go to the. It's a beautiful campus. It's very small, but it is beautiful.
Yeah, I actually took a graduate course in Hagerstown many years ago in the 70s, and it was an interesting episode in my life.
That was probably in the building that I later worked in for 10 years.
Right. And I couldn't even tell you where it was because
it's right down on the square corner.
Yeah. I just went there and it was an evening class.
Mm-hmm.
And I played softball with the teacher.
Was there in the classroom?
No.
Was there an elevator in the building?
I don't remember.
That was a long time ago then.
Yeah.
You can't remember that.
Oh, no. This was, 40-some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I remember today that this morning over coffee, I remembered a date and realized that I still think of myself as having been a science, math teacher, and track coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I
That's clear.
And I haven't coached any track for 31 years. How about that?
When you came to Hagerstown for that class, were you living in Baltimore or in Frederick?
And I was actually living in Westminster.
Huh?
I lived in Westminster for many years, from the Westminster area from 1967 to 80 something, 80, maybe even 80, yeah, 80, 89. So, anyway, I like this. It was very good.
Did you time me?
I was timing you, and then I stopped. Then I stopped looking at the timer when we started talking. So
I think it was 12 minutes.
I'll buy that.
Okay.
it was around 12 minutes, and it mm-hmm. might have been a little bit more.
Okay.
So anyway, that's good. Those things are coming into shape. I'm looking forward to watching you do this. I hope I get to see it.
Me too. I hope you get to see it too.
Right.
Yeah. Give me my best feedback.
So right.
That'll be fun.
And today I'm expecting to get the information for the, for the performance I'm doing tomorrow night at 7:00 for the Washington County Libraries on Zoom. I'm doing this. This is set up in place of the 7 in-person things I was going to do at the library system, like I did last year in 2019. And but tomorrow night we'll be telling three stories of Sleeping Beauties.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all set and everything. And but the central person or whoever's going to run this has not sent me the link yet.
Right.
So
if our listeners want to watch,
they can go to, I will put that on my Facebook page.
Great. Okay.
And I will put that like in the Sharpsville page and I'll send it to you.
Okay.
And because it's going to be at 7:00 and never having done a single person Zoom concert,
mm-hmm.
I have no idea how long it's going to go and what it's going to be like, because I did get the whoever is in charge of part of this. I did get the poster that they sent. I got it Saturday, but I got it from my contact person in Sharpsburg.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It has a picture of me and my wife sitting in front of the backdrop for one of the schools where I taught for the stage, the backdrop of the Globe Theater.
Yeah.
And it's, and the title, and a nice picture on either side of that of Sleeping Beauty and something else. And then above it, it says Sleeping Beauty three times. So, that, you know,
yeah,
I'm glad they put that out.
So, okay. And remind me what day we're talking about.
Tuesday, tomorrow, the 16th at 7 o'clock.
Okay. Sleeping Beauty three times.
Right.
I'm really looking forward to this.
Right. And I wish I had a snappy opening. I know the muse.
You will by then.
Will bring it to me. But this morning I was looking at my bottles with the balloons, and I thought, boy, that is such a great background. But I have no way of putting them behind me where I'm going to tell the stories.
You always have your flash ring.
I know. Oh, I can't do that on... I can't do that unless I let people know that I'm going to do it, because that is scary to some people. And I've done it, and I had at least one person come to me and say, when that flash went off, I thought someone had shot you.
Mm.
You know, because I didn't tell them I'm going to make fire shoot out of my hand. And and she said, and I thought it was kind of neat, but for a few seconds, I thought I had witnessed someone being shot.
Wow.
I thought, well, you know, that's something
don't
to
do
consider.
That, then.
No. And I have very little material left for my my flash cotton. And Denny's in Baltimore, I think, is the owner from Denny's Magic Shop, died this past year. And I have not been able to find a place to supply me. And I've gone online a couple of times, and I haven't found one that I was satisfied with. You know, Denny was a magician, and he owned the store. He was a wonderful guy. I never met him in person, but over the years, over many years, close to 20 years, I could just call him and say, I need some more flash cotton. And he'd say, I know who this is. He said, you probably should do ads for the company that makes those rings, because you use it more than anybody.
Well, it is one of your signature
props. And I carry it everywhere with me.
Well, I have an idea to offer as a possible prop for your opening.
Yes.
You said you were not going to sing Sleeping Beauty, but it's enough of a classic that you could just bring out your accordion for like 30 seconds or 15 seconds and do something really goofy that relates to one of the stories, even if it's just a single line of some song that is tangentially related.
And we'd have
all you want is a grabber. Follow through for the rest of it.
Well, I'm still thinking.
I just love it when you play accordion.
Yeah, well.
Since I'm going to watch.
Right. Okay, well, I won't promise that I will, because, you know, I haven't touched it in a while.
I
need to.
I understand.
Because I'm going to use it next month. But, an explosion of some kind is what I always like.
This is an iconic Stosh conversation.
Yeah,
but an explosion would be... So apropos.
Wow. That you didn't think you were going to see somebody explode a great big balloon or something, you know. So.
Okay. Tell us a story, Stosh. We're almost out of time. I can't believe it. You let me talk too long.
No. Well, so tell me our
had
theme.
Any control.
Tell me what we said our theme was.
First responders.
There you go. Okay. So here's my story. And I will... I'm watching the clock, so in 2006, my wife and I left Maryland and moved to Arkansas. And I was retired. It was my last year. I had finished my last year full-time teaching. And my wife had begun to take real estate courses. And she became a very successful real estate person in Arkansas. She doesn't like me to say it much because she's kind of shy. And she was one of the best real estate people there and did quite well at it. Well, shortly after we were living in Arkansas, we have relatives back here on the East Coast. We have relatives in Utah. We have relatives in Massachusetts, and her mother and her stepdad lived in Pittsburgh, where Terry grew up. And so we were there just a short while, maybe a few months, and she came back to Pittsburgh to visit with her mom. And she did that many times over the years. Well, it was a Saturday night, and I was home by myself, and we lived on a short piece of driveway, which had been a road, and at about 11:30, I began having chest pains, and I've had heart problems for years, or since the early 80s, and been hospitalized a number of times. I'd had pretty bad heart attack in 84. So I don't fool around with chest pains. I thought, well, okay. I picked up the phone. I dialed 911. And I said, I'm having chest pains. And immediately, in no time, I could hear the sirens because we lived a mile from the fire station and the EMT headquarters. And so I went to the front door and I sat on the steps of our house, had the outside light on, and the ambulance went to the correct address. However, it was across the road. And so they were knocking on a door at a house that was maybe 40 yards away from me. However, it wasn't my house. My house was across the road. And so I walked carefully out to my mailbox and began shouting, "I'm up here." That became quite a story. Once I joined the service of the ambulance service. Anyway, they immediately, one of the men immediately came running up. The ambulance pulled into my driveway. They put me in the ambulance, took me to the hospital. I was there overnight. They came back the next morning to the hospital and to bring me home, which I thought was incredible. I had mentioned that my wife was in Pittsburgh, and I was alone for the weekend. And I'm not sure that they did that for everybody, but I know they were very good at taking care of people. So they brought me back, and I thanked them. One of the men that I met that night was John Foster, who I became friends with, and I still consider him a friend. And I said, you know, you guys treated me so well. I'd like to be able to do something for the ambulance people. And he said, well, you could always make a donation, you know. And I said, well, we've done that already here. And he said, well, why don't you join us? He said, you're retired. I know that because I saw one of your performance things you did. And he said, you know, you could become a driver or even an EMT or something. And so shortly after that, I went to a meeting, and I got to stand up in front of them and thank them. You know, it was a group of about maybe 30 men. and two women, and I began training as an ambulance driver, where I had to drive five times in a real emergency with a seasoned person beside me. And after my fifth successful run, I was given all the things that made me a true ambulance driver. And so for the next 2 years, I drove the ambulance. Every month I volunteered, I would get a few days, and, you know, I had a beeper and a red light for my van and for my motorcycle. And I have considered that two of the best things, 2 years of the best service I've ever done for other people. It was 24 hours of duty, 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. And sometimes we had as many as five or six calls in those 24 hours. And sometimes we had one call, but that beeper had to stay next to me all 24 hours. And it was exciting and interesting and really worthwhile work. And people in the community, I became more noticed in the community, a small community, but and I did have a theater program I'd started, and the fact that I was driving the ambulance and people got to know that as well as doing this theater stuff, I became well known in the community as a nice person. And it was just wonderful. The whole thing was, I quit after 2 years because of my surgery in my hands. I have trigger fingers four times and needed surgeries. I had three surgeries, and my hands are not real strong. And the driver of the ambulance takes care of the gurney. Taking the gurney out of the ambulance, even though you have a button which pushes, you push it and the legs go down to the ground automatically. When you do that and have a 200 plus pound man who you need to be careful with and get the gurney down on the ground and into the hospital, I began having trouble with my hands as far as being able to safely hold it. And after two runs where I thought to myself, I could endanger this person if I dropped this end of the gurney coming out of the ambulance. And so I resigned because I didn't want to take a chance on anybody being hurt because of me. But it was very nice. I had made good friends in there, and people liked the fact that I was retired and volunteered to do that, even though I was keeping very busy with theater and storytelling. So
another wonderful story from Stash Zilkowski.
Right. Thank you.
I like that story.
Yeah. I had a wonderful jacket and hat from them, but when I retired from my duty, I had returned it. Because, yeah. It was a great part of my life there.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing that story. That's a great first responder story from a first responder himself.
Thank you.
Our own stuff. Do you have other last minute announcements? I have one.
Well, yeah.
Because the last couple times I have forgotten to talk about talltales.enlightenradio.org, where you can go online and listen to all of our programs back almost 3 years.
3 years?
Yes.
I had a memory on Facebook this week, 3 years ago, that I was on the radio with you.
There you go.
I didn't think it was that long.
I keep telling you.
I know you do.
Years. Yeah.
And I would like to mention that in July, Tom Lee is going to be doing a speak story Zoom. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have more information as we go on.
Have you heard him before?
I do not think so.
I don't think so either. So I'm looking forward to hearing a brand new teller for me.
Right.
He's not a brand new teller, but for me, he will be.
No, he looks like a relatively young man. However, storytellers are notorious for using pictures. Last year, one of the storytellers performed, and I had seen her picture a number of places. And when she started, I looked around and I thought,
she's 20 years older than her.
This is an old lady. What I saw was a, you know, like a 35-year-old, you know.
I thought you were going to say that he's a young-looking man, and then you realized that storytellers keep themselves in such great shape because storytelling is such a great way to stay youthful.
Yeah.
And all these people who were in their 70s look like they're 35.
I guess they could. Maybe they get jobs that way. Maybe that's why nobody's beating down my door and wanting me to be a national storyteller and travel the world, because I'm an old man.
Okay.
The last thing.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's the last thing. You
might notice, you've only seen me once a week on this. You might notice that I'm starting to look more and more like Santa Claus.
Your beard is getting
my
a
beard
couple
is
inches longer than it was
longer
months ago.
So,
all right. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasia Olkowski.
Your storytelling hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, independent community radio via the internet, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. We look forward to seeing you again next Monday at 12 noon, where we will again be sharing stories from our community and encouraging our listeners to share and document all of our stories to make community.
There you go. Thanks, everybody.
John, what's coming up next?